You're listening to 197.4 Pirate Radio, the non-stationary station that digs deep and uncovers the truth like unearthing an old family dog corpse to make into bone broth. I'm Magdex the Insufferable.
And I am the sweaty palm that guides you to the proverbial dead dog, Conrad Wisely. Welcome back to Truth and Nail, where we blow the doors off some of the deepest, darkest secrets that Big Brother keeps tucked under his pee-stained mattress.
What's the poop today? Money isn't real? The entertainment industry is run by sentient farts in jars? Wait, don't tell me. Goblins invented humans.
No, my scrappy chappy. Today we blow the dust off some of the secrets of Amorous, the unofficial capital of Nidrasil, a place everybody hears about but nobody's visited. What lies beyond the secret walls of this untapped powerhouse? That's what we're here to tell you.
How does a city become an unofficial capital? Isn't that kind of an all-or-nothing scenario?
Well, Dex, as you might know, most of Nidrasil is a verdant wilderness, with nomadic clans living free of the shackles of taxation and government way stations.
Sure, yeah. Tree sniffers.
Well, as the vocal majority of the population, they're pretty against the idea of, like, official cities or massive trade centers, you know, overpopulated communities. Therefore, they just don't care for labels like a capital or country. Or immigrant, for that matter.
How edgy.
But most people don't realize just how populated Amorous is. And unlike the rest of Nidrasil, they are extremely governed. It just doesn't really pass their borders. Where some people of Amorous abide by the laws of the perfect, the high and mighty savior. As far as cities go, on a scale from 1 to 10, where 1 is a bunch of dusty Bedouins at a campsite, Amorous is a freaking 10. The closest thing they have to a bustling Nodite lucidity.
No kidding? There's a city like that? And those crusty old druids still want to live in the sticks? What gives?
Listen, Dex, unlike the Aetherflame powerhouse of industry and power that is Nod, Amorous is built on the corpse of past technology. And while they are what they used to be, they're still a freaky facsimile of a time forgotten. Nobody really knows how they work, but whatever they figure out, they use. What once might have been the power core to a flying city is now a massive self-harvesting greenhouse. What once was the chassis of some warmonger's penis extension now might be some white coat hospital that heals the sick as well as any weaver. It's like taking a war declaration and folding it into an origami duck, art forged from Terra.
That's wild. Why don't more people know about all this? Why do you?
Oh, they don't deal with the outside world, Dex. They like things the way they have it. And believe me, if you don't have citizenship or a writ of transit, they will flush you like last night's spaghetti sandwich.
You mean you've been there?
I was a younger man, Dex. My waistline and my inhibitions were half the size. I was a fresh-faced tourist on his first trip to Nidrasil after dropping out of a half-rate canine college. The mystery was too much to bear. I had to hop the fence and see for myself. I went broke bribing a sky fairy to get me close enough, but I found a dump chute and climbed for my life. The whole dang city was like some mosque-cake mecca. People in uniforms all walking the same direction. Huge buildings made of forgotten tech. Even the weather felt fake. I lasted about 15 minutes of slog-jawed bewilderment before a six-pack of enforcers gave me the pat-down and sent me packing. I'll never forget it.
Well, at least they sound like a bunch of obedient little puppets. Let them reinvent the wheel and turn it into some kind of art installation. They sure don't sound like a threat. Now, what are those big woven war eagles? Now, that's something to be afraid of.
I don't know, Dex. They're about as tame as tigers pacing their magical cage. The kind of power that engenders unflinching obedience? That's more dangerous than any warship. I'll take 3 rows of rusty boom tubes over a city of zealots any day.
Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's Journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's Journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Yeah. Pink ichor drips down into the void as an unnamed ship lurches along the aether waves like a wounded animal. White knuckles grip the rudder to keep her on course despite the damages accrued. A bent mainmast, a torn-up quarterdeck, and several feet of missing gunwale. All results of a forceful and dangerous coupling with a midnight hooker, a raiding ship of goblin design. A hodgepodge of temporary duct tape and sheet metal repairs have been slapped together to hold her steady, but the living wood ship seems to protest at every rolling wave. There just aren't enough supplies on hand to attempt more lasting repairs. Safe to assume the white knuckles belong to one Darlu, grabbing the rudder.
The old beast looks like she's had a good night out. Miss Bag?
Yeah, Flapper?
How's them internal repairs coming along?
It's all gobbed up.
I'm aware.
We need to dock somewhere for repairs.
Well, that might be some time.
Well, it better be soon. We can't keep limping along like this.
Well, I know. I've been limping along for a while.
Even getting it into dock is going to be hard. Docking isn't as easy as everyone says.
Especially if you're circumcised.
What?
Ooh, goblin circumcision. Topic of debate.
Well, you don't give me the old snip snip.
If anything, our ship has absolutely had its tip lopped off. So, in order to make things right again, I'd suggest you take structural notes from Mr. Kithkin's bad bod and grab some extra sticky from whatever Gidgel has to spare.
I'm giving it all she's got, Captain.
Mucilage seeping from your body.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go continue repairs as best I can, but we're going to need a lot more duct tape.
I never thought we'd have a bedpan full of adhesive.
Before you make your way back down, from below deck, Sir Troth staggers up the stairs, relying on his spear like a crutch to keep him upright on the ship's deck. His normal coffee and cream hue seems graying. His thick fungal hide looks dry and cracked, and his piercing white eyes are mere specks.
Something is wrong with the heart.
Something appears to be wrong with you.
You don't look so good.
Well, say you look like you need a bit of water.
Explain the situation, Sir Troth.
It was whatever those goblins did, mechanically speaking. They were very precise in removing the core from the collar, but spiritually speaking, they desecrated the fragile nest I had cultivated for the core. It is disrupting our connection to the ship and mine as well.
You should sit down. Let's check you out. I'm the ship's surgeon, after all.
Oh, boy.
What kind of anatomy is this?
I think we may need a botanist or perhaps a chef.
A chef? Fuck you. Yeah, he looks completely dried out, and the kind of vibrant, radiant life that he sort of gives off seems completely turned down to one.
Fo's going to go down into the engine room, and I'm going to use my Sin Eater ability and try to tap into the dream and see if I can get an idea of what exactly is happening inside the core.
Sure. Go ahead and roll me a Sincraft.
That is a 16 plus 4.
Okay. It definitely seems like being a living ship, it is something that goblins have no care or experience for, the living wood being, you know, a lesser material to them. While they took extreme care in working on the core so that there's no damage to it, there's no chips or cracks in the collar or the device itself, they absolutely just wrecked all of the growth and dirt and debris that had been kind of keeping it safe and forming a bridge between it and the ship. While the collar actually connects it to powering the ship, its resonance, its way of becoming one with the living wood just got shredded like so much goblin foreskin. And the byproduct, which was also tied to Troth having built the nest, seems to just be needing time to recover, ideally with some fresh earth or something similar.
Sir Troth, do we need to return to Nidrasil and re-up our supplies alone?
I don't know. I am no navigator. But we should land soon. The ship is tired.
Mr. Gidgel.
Yes, sir.
You can climb that mast, though it's crooked and bent, aye?
Easily enough.
Get up in that stormy tree and see what you can find.
Gidgel is going to have his fingertips and, you know, his equally sized toes just go into little cracks that have developed into the mast and just sticky finger his way up there.
Yeah, like resin pouring.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of like drip drop all the way up.
Oh, God. So
it's like when the carnival game where you hit the thing, but moist. And all around in every direction, other than like the very faint remnant sparks of the collapsing cove far behind you, it's void as far as the eye can see. You think you might need to reference some of the Aethertine maps you were given by the League.
Yeah. It's nothing but void out there, Captain. We're navigating blind.
What else is new? I don't think anybody here actually knows how to fucking operate a navigator's tools.
Oh, I do.
You
I've
do?
Been studying.
Oh.
Well, Mr. Gidgel, looks like it's time to cultivate the fruits of your learning. If you can't find anything from up there, get to the charts. See what you can locate.
Are we looking for just simply a place to park?
Frankly, right now, we're looking for anything large enough to hold our vessel.
What of water? Food?
Those are concerns, yes. But if our ship is destroyed out here, we're fucked either way.
Also, we come equipped with 2 weeks emergency rations, just in case.
Hey, Bungus, when was the last time you ate? If you need a hot meal, I could probably squeeze something together for you.
Don't say squeeze.
Which one of us is Bungus?
Oh, Bungus the Fungus.
That's Sir Bungus.
Fair.
I do not nourish myself the same way that you do. The core room was my place to do such things.
It's not what the chamber pot said.
That became part of the dirt.
I was trying to be delicate.
Gidgel, would you like to roll me a navigation check by referencing your Aethertine charts?
May I use my navigator's tools?
Yes.
And is this a wisdom? Or
I believe wisdom and proficiency sounds just right for this.
Lovely. That is going to be a 9 total.
9 total. You spend a great deal of time looking for something. These are new charts to you. You are definitely trained in the ways of navigation, but the League has a very specific way that they present their ether maps. And it is a learning curve, to say the least. So some time is wasted in trying to figure it out. But eventually, scanning the maps and calculating for the speed at which you left the crumbling Void Cove, you find a possible salvation in the form of a speck nearby that is either a gross mapping error or a micro island whose name has been specifically removed from the charts. You're not sure what that means, but it is categorized as having an ecosystem, and it may possibly be one of the many floating Nidrasili gardens that they send out that just kind of grow in the void until they bump into something and spread more seeds. But as far as options, it is the closest and the most likely. There's just some questions attached to it.
So, Captain, it would have been nice if we kept note of where we were. So, we're going to have to look for landmarks.
The cars?
The highest percentage would be to head towards this sowing space. The Nidrasili send land masses off to spread growth. We could run into one of them.
You hear that, Sir Troth? Mr. Gidgel's found a tiny farm.
What luck?
Luck is a group of organizations that all work together. Oh, right, I see. I see what you're talking about.
Spelled differently, Sir Kithkin. Spelled differently.
To be fair, I still need to learn that stuff at some point.
Besides, his diction's a bit fuzzy. Well, with not having a mouth and all.
If Smelly Jelly needs help, I can help navigate.
That would be excellent. All I need is a heading.
Why don't you each roll me a skill related to helping to make this limping ship find its way to this speck on the map of potential salvation?
I am proficient in spacecrafts. May I roll that?
Absolutely.
What ability score would you like me to use?
For you, intelligence.
Thank God. Natural 20.
Ooh.
For a 26.
So, in the process of translating the complicated Aethertine maps into steering in that direction, you are a blur of motion in between transferring the information, sending messages back and forth. And on the way, just like slapping some nails down to hold together some boards that are separating too much, patching up a mast as it cracks a little bit. Just, you're all over the place, helpful in every direction.
Daralu is going to use a perception check, and feel free to tell me if you'd like me to use insight instead, to try to use his senses to listen to the ship and feel the vibrations. If it groans harder trying to move it this way, if I can tell that, you know, wood is really stressing or having a problem moving that way, and trying to be more gentle with those directions while at the wheel.
While at the wheel. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give me a dexterity insight check?
I'm so fucking down with that. That will be a 14 total.
All right. I like how our most exciting new thing is always just like scrambling up the skill stat assembly as much as we can. It's fun. I love
it's
it.
It's cool.
And it makes sense most of the time.
Absolutely.
All right. How about Gidgel?
Gidgel is going to try and continue Sir Troth's labor in the core room. What little vegetation is still there, he is going to try and keep alive so that the link between the heart and the living ship is maintained.
Great. How about a wisdom nature check?
That is going to be a 20 total.
20 total. All right. You're not familiar with Troth's method of organization, but you know how to help make things grow. You know how, maybe more than anyone, the delicate system of things harvesting moisture from the very earth, things being tucked away in a dark place to grow and cultivate. And you absolutely bring that into this chamber and maybe in some ways improve his methods. All right. How about Foe? What kind of help are you given to this hodgepodge?
Not a goddamn thing. He realizes he's not great with the ropes. He's not very good at any kind of ship work. So instead, he does the only thing he knows how to do. He starts singing. He pulls out a few sea shanties, some marching tunes, whatever he can come up with. Some of them in random Noddite dialects that nobody understands. But he's going to go ahead and get them shanties going.
Great. Is this going to be a performance?
That it is.
Like lightening the mood.
Exactly.
A morale boost.
Well, just keeping rhythm, keeping everybody motivated and with body songs, ideally. Everybody should be getting into it.
Hell yeah, you're beating that box.
That's a two. Oh, hold on. 2+5.
Okay. You do not read the room. There is a certain degree of focus and panic that the songs you're picking are just the counter melody to. I also imagine you probably, like, as everyone's just running around working as hard as they can, passing out some like ration sandwiches, like hardtack with some preserved liver spread on it. And it's just not the right place.
little like lunch bags. And there's like a little sachet of acid. Just like in case, you know.
Here, have this sandwich. Great. There's drugs in it. You could have told me before I ate it.
I give you plenty of time.
Wonderful. That said, another day of limping and praying as the ship holds itself together under constant supervision. And while it is morning, the darkness surrounding remains completely apathetic to this. Gidgel, you are the first to see it, shouting for everyone to come and look. Well, nothing more than a rock on the beach compared to Nod and Nidrasil. This is more than some speck on a map. This is a right proper chunk of island, as green and vibrant as any you'd hope to see. As you draw near, approaching from above, you see the tops of countless trees, huge and twisting, colossal ferns casting shade on the ground below, and even waterfalls toppling down from small mountains. It's a jungle. It's beautiful. And it's getting closer a little faster than you had planned. You manage to find berth within a narrow clearing, setting down the anchor amongst twisting tree roots and weaving vines. And as you do, the ship just seems to limp. The moment it stops its momentum, a few more pieces just unceremoniously fall to the ground. A host of tropical birds takes to the air as the ship comes to a stop, like a cloud of bright yellow with specks of red and pink. The grass is thick and overtakes the polished round stones surrounding a nearby trickling creek. Insects flit about in the air, and the sound of unknown cries of nature resonate from the distant shadows of the nearby treetops.
Gorgeous. The kind of gorgeous that the elders warned us away from.
If this is Nidrasil in origin, we don't know how many of these trees could be sentient.
True. Snarulf and Wynog territory.
No garbage in sight. What a hellhole.
Looks like you'll just have to make your own, Ms. Back. Mr. Kithkin.
Aye.
Will this do well for you? Last time we were in territory like this, it made you a bit fuzzy.
I should be all right. The only thing it might do is make my magic a bit weird.
I'm slowly getting used to that fact.
Gidgel is going to try and fetch Sir Troth, kind of lean his weight on his shoulder and bring him to the gunwale.
What a beautiful shade of green. These trees are not like any I've seen back home.
Gidgel propping somebody up, like trying to like pull yourself up on a fucking beanbag
back chair.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah,
not a waterbed.
Iris, scan the Atmo. What are we dealing with?
Iris can do that.
Not really. But it sounds cool.
Sure. Sir Troth, so do we like plant you here? Bury you a little bit? Or
I will stay with the ship and we will rest.
Will that be close enough for you?
Yes.
All right.
But this was a speck on the map, and it's a pretty large island. There is a chance that other people have come or gone. There might even be other ships or people here. Hard to tell from your little corner of the forest. It's very obscured by massive trees and mountains.
I think it'd be smart to do a little perimeter surveillance, walk about it, see what we can expect from this area, and, like what Mr. Gidgel suggested, find any resources we can take back. Foods, waters. We have emergency supplies, but it'd be nice to dine on something what weren't meant for emergencies.
Well said, incumbent. So, we had a bit of a conversation before we left. This qualifies as our next quest. Now, I don't know about you, but this could be a good opportunity to see how you all handle a little bit of pressure.
Oh.
So what say, as decisions come up, we rotate. Except me, of course.
Well, that sounds good to me.
I'd be willing to give that a try. I thought you were going to suggest something like fill our packs with rocks or a bit more literal.
No. Now, the only thing I'm worried about right now is the well-being of a crew and a ship. At least under this moon.
I couldn't agree more. A last concern I need to bring up before we touch down is that of defense of the ship proper. Last time we left it on its lonesome, we got snagged, and we're still reeling from that. We can't survive something like that again. Sir Troth, I know you are staying with the ship, but I fear you're not in a position to defend it correctly. Ms. Bagg, is there any sort of preemptive defense that you can establish for the ship itself before we leave? We're not in a time crunch.
Well, the best thing we can do is hide it. It'll at least be safe from Midnight Raiders here. Hookers don't come to places like this.
Unless they're paid enough.
What?
Huh?
Mm?
None of you are making sense today.
So, would you like to do me a little jerry-rigging of trying to hide the ship in the jungly terrain?
Yes.
I would love if... Is Lita initiating this?
Yes.
Why don't you give me an int survival check?
All right, everyone. Let's start gathering some fronds. I think they're called fronds. 15.
Ooh, not bad.
All right, everyone. Drop the sails, make the mast look like a tree as much as you can, and let's cover the deck of the ship with green.
Following Lita's somewhat convoluted orders, you do a pretty good job of hodgepodging together some of these large ferns. Blessedly huge these ferns are, as well as getting some fallen branches and leaning them up against the mast. And, you know, anyone with a keen intelligence walking past you would say, that's a ship. But most things from a distance would have no idea you're here. It's pretty good cover.
Well, it looks like you've took this boat back 3 or 4 good steps.
From ship to shit in 3 easy steps. A little bag novel.
You can write?
I'm working on it. I've gotten the A down. It's the one that looks like it's screaming.
Now hold on, this is important. Which one? Half the letters look like they're screaming.
And the other half should look like they're screaming.
That's fair. But it's the little house. You know,
Well, that's the sound it makes. That's what you've got to remember.
I'm working on my phonics. We don't have time for this. Let's go.
hookered on phonics.
There we go.
Capital G ever look like it's biting its lip at you, giving you the sexy look?
It certainly does seem begging, doesn't it? A little too desperate.
Just a bit.
And why'd they have to give the little one a tail?
Something for the big one to chew on.
Oh, gross.
Well, the bee looks like a butt.
The bee does look like a butt. And that's the little amazing. Bee looks like a half butt, or a hay butt, if you will.
Hay butt?
Stop making me write names down.
Well, we're doing something.
As he says this, you see his eyes are bloodshot as shit.
There is jungle to explore. So super quick, why don't you each give me just a skill check to see how you navigate through the jungle. It can be whatever you think is relevant. We'll start on the opposite side this time with Foe.
Foe is a little blazed right now.
Gasp.
He's kind of vibing. He's here for the experience.
But hey, when you're in Jamaica.
When you're in Jamaica, do as the Jamaicans do. So he's kind of trying to like feel out the place and get attuned with the weirdness that is Nidrasili landscapes. He's going to go ahead and try for a charisma religion to kind of tap into it and synchronize with it.
You're doing a spiritual insight.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like it.
That is a 11 plus 4.
Okay. You are picking up on all kinds of new kinds of nature that you've never dealt with before. There's even like some conflict between your natural gross hand bugs and the regional bugs. They seem to be very territorial about your immediate vicinity. But there are very old things here. Even the size of the trees does not illustrate the age that rests beneath this jungle. And it's fascinating, to say the least.
From what I know about Nidrasili culture and history, is there anything significant I can pick up from vibing on this place?
You would say that this is probably a rare kind of seed to form this sort of jungle. Everything that you have dealt with, at least regarding Nidrasili nature, has been very much evergreen forests and more like birch and elm trees, whereas these are like very tall tropical trees with ferns. And while there was small pockets of jungle that you encountered, this one is huge. So a one-of-a-kind experience. How about Gidgel?
Since this was a floating island, I'm going to try and use just wisdom survival. Mm-hmm. Because you've mentioned that this is very apparent that this thing is ancient. So maybe there's a chance for underground shenanigans to happen.
Interesting. I like that.
So more of a focus on what could be going on underneath our feet.
Great.
That is going to be a 13.
All right. There's a lot of nature to explore and look at. It's almost like immediately analysis paralysis. Like, let's do some math. And suddenly you're in a room full of numbers. You're like, oh, God, where do I start? But you're fairly certain that based on the age and some of the structures of kind of how the low cliffs are formed and some trees are risen up higher than others, it's entirely possible that way long ago, there might have been some stuff here, like building stuff. And it is completely destroyed and consumed by nature itself. Very little evidence at all, but something about the way it's structured and built, you're like, this might have been like part of a town like way long ago.
Mm.
Back in Innisgard, deep jungles and forests, well, deep forests, are places where you go if you want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Aggressive beasts and worse lurk in them. And when you want to make your way through them and survive, you have to be as beneath notice as possible. So strung bow in one hand, arrow in the other, and horn of Orgrier in his tail.
So a can of cider?
Exactly, yes. Darulu is going to make a stealth check.
Please.
Just a simple stealth check.
I'm not going to delineate from Dex on this one. That sounds pretty logical.
7.
You just can't help blowing that fucking horn.
Your lips are thirsty for honking that big horn.
I shall play the song of stealth.
Also, just the constant ow, ow of things stinging you.
Ow, fuck. Ow, shit.
And how about Lita, just to wrap this little skill up?
I would like to roll investigation to look around for anything that we might be able to use to patch up our ship or other signs of perhaps non-ruined civilization.
Hell yes, please.
Nat 20.
Oh, wow.
Holy fucking
25.
Shit.
25.
On fire. Despite the fact that the ground is thick
with grass and ferns and vegetation and vines, you spot something shiny. And as you bend over to pick it up, you lift it, and it is completely spherical, heavy, definitely lead. You realize this is a very modern projectile. And as you turn to show the group, the sound of tree trunks bending and snapping unleashes a blinding wave of swarming bugs and more of those tropical yellow birds as the jungle to the north explodes to life. Branches topple and the ground quakes as a lumbering beast comes into view, parting the very trees like a curtain. A massive quadrupedal thing, dragging itself across the ground like a toad. But unlike a toad, its wide jaws are filled with curved yellowing fangs, and huge flat feet end in claws like greatswords. Its eyes are red like the promise of poison, and its throat rumbles a percussive threat. But while the beast is vast and mighty, it is the figure that stands upon its head that strikes you as the most unusual. Looking down, leveling a long, heavy firearm trained upon your group. What do they see?
You see a young woman of the Gif race. These hippo folk are naturally girthy and strong, and she is no exception. She wears a safari vest and jodhpurs, which exaggerate her already generously portioned thighs and backside. They're almost glorious enough in proportion to distract from the baleful blunderbuss, whose barrel is ogling your party. Her long-lashed eyes glare past auburn curls of hair that have escaped her pith helmet. When she speaks to you, you can see sparkling white ivory, and you note that the tusks of her lower jaw have silvery filigreed plates on them. Halt, poachers! I'd wager you didn't expect to find me here.
This is stupid. We got this cage reinforced with as much iron as we used to mend the hull, and they're still bending the hinges. If this lock gives, we're all bird food.
Yeah, I say we kill these big oafs and sell their meat to some baron for his next feast. Their meat's worth twice their weight in ardor.
No doubt. Not to mention we'd be rid of the smell and the noise. I should go talk to the boss.
That won't be necessary.
Hey, boss.
Sounds like you've been doing some forward thinking. Putting the axe to these birds to make some much-needed coin for their meat.
Yeah. Just thinking about that bottom line, boss. You know how much you care about turning a profit. Why not cash in now and get off this rock?
You're a problem solver, aren't you?
I try to be, sir.
Then solve this problem. Now, how much ardor is your corpse worth?
Holy shit.
You see these birds?
Yes, sir.
How much do you think they weigh?
500 pounds each?
Pretty close. Let's call it 5 each. That's 1,000 ardor per bird. Pretty good, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, how much do you think an egg sells for?
I don't know, boss.
4,000 ardor to the right buyer. These stupid birds are the last of their kind. Rare meat sells once. But endangered eggs? That's a payday 3 times a year. Now why don't you leave the math to me?
Yes, boss.
And let's get something straight. If those birds break that door, then you're holding it closed with your teeth. I don't care if they're the only thing that leaves this island with me. I'm getting my eggs!
Yes, sir!
Now get a unit ready. There's another prize I've had my eye on, and it's on the move.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Hail, you cuties! I just googled who has the best fans, and it totally said LUQ. Well, not really, but it should have. Our Discord community is amazing. Supporting, responsive, helpful, and hilarious. It's worth joining just for the memes. We're all on there constantly, and I apologize if I've been a little less active lately, but I guarantee I've been reading everything. If you haven't hopped on the Patreon yet, you should. I've been much better this season about taking some behind-the-scenes photos of recordings, and I'll start posting them in bonus content. And there should be more custom stat blocks and magic items being uploaded soon. Not to mention all the rewards from Season 1 and 2 come with it. What a time to be alive. Even if you don't interact but you tune in every week, we love you. And we thank you for being a fan. It means more than you think. That's enough out of me. Let's get you back to the action.
There are many ways to tell the world that you're a wizard with distinguished tastes and powerful magic. Maybe you carry around a radiant orb full of ancient mysteries. Maybe your wizard hat is exceptionally tall. Or maybe your staff is thick and pulsing with raw power. Well, now there is a more refined way. A way to show the world I've got tricks up my sleeve. A way to marry raw arcane might with fashion that you can wear around your wrist. A living watch of stone, gold, platinum, or even mithril. Tell time with style.
What time is it?
4:50.
Golex, time is a construct.
LU cuties, I present you the return of Sam Frost.
Woo! Hi, guys. It's
special
good to see
guest.
You.
Special guest. Special guest.
Do you feel special?
And guesty?
Yeah.
Secret guest star.
Secret guest star.
I'm so proud you stayed so quiet for the first half.
I was watching you like dying across the way.
So, you stand gobsmacked in the shadow of a towering bestial behemoth, upon whose head stands an imposing hippo figure, with a firearm glinting in the sun as they take aim with one eye open.
Not here to poach or anything else that would make you do anything further with that there pistol you got trained on us.
A likely story. You came here to get yourself some slonky trophies, I'm sure of it.
I'm gonna push on Gigil and said, nope, we're slonked enough.
Then what did you come for?
Hold on, drop the blambo. What are you?
You can't just ask that, Lydda. This here's a gift. The noble people of Nidrasil. Well, an island outside of Nidrasil. But it didn't take them long once they came in contact with Nod before they started to go a little, technology obsessed.
Oh.
Hence the blambo.
Well, you look like you squat some scrap. Why don't you come down and we can compare barrels?
And they say I'm the one who's hard to understand.
I've never seen Lydda try to fuck someone this quickly.
I think she's six, by the way.
She's what?
Lydda.
She's what?
I think she's 6.
Years old?
I think.
Oh, that would explain a few things.
What are you all talking about down there?
Precocious scamps.
You got a lot of them here.
What are you talking about? I'll have you know I'm 8.5.
8.5 what?
Hortense fires a warning shot.
Whoa,
fuck yeah. Fuck yeah.
I prefer to be respected when I'm aiming my gun at you.
Well, you can prefer all you want.
How are this? We're not here to threaten you and your large toad friend here.
His name's Bill.
That's a shorter name than I was expecting. Do you want to come down off Bill and perhaps talk to us on nice, solid ground?
She takes a moment and gives a suspicious look around at all of you and says, well, you don't look like poachers.
You keep saying that. We're not trying to get any new team members.
Someone's saying we're not here to cook eggs.
You might not be looking for new team members, but I think we could all use a little bit more of a feminine edge.
On their side, however, if I were outnumbered in such a way, I wouldn't mind keeping the high ground.
No, Smokinut is right. You want a job?
Smokinut is rock solid.
At the mention of femininity, she pats her little ponytail hair and does a little wiggle.
I love her.
And she says, well, I suppose I could come down.
The huge reptilian creature, while terrifying at a glance, seems quite gentle in its mannerisms and movements. The way it lowers its head and waits patiently for the rider gives it the impression that it's some kind of pet.
I thought she's had some sort of ladder to get up and down.
The creature itself has leather straps around its neck and down its back, attached to a large wagon that it's been harnessed to pull. And inside the wagon, there are a few small crates and stacks of wild fruit and firewood wrapped in twine. And as it lowers its head, Hortense steps down to the ground to be eye level with you, save for their advantage of height.
If we're going to begin in the negotiations, I think next in line would be our friend Gigil.
Oh, that'll be fun. Go get him, champ.
Sure thing. We are the crew of an unnamed vessel. This is our captain, Darilu.
Darilu Naranav Han. Pleasure to meet you.
Bless you.
Sure.
You could have said Gesundheit, but there are no Gesunts to hide here. Mm.
Are you kidding me? This monster's a Gesunt.
That Gesunt's loose.
Have you not considered names for your vessel?
It hasn't earned one yet.
I like that.
Oh, well, thank you.
This is our surgeon and technology officer.
Shipwright. Surgeon and shipwright. Litter bag reporting.
Currently ship wrong.
It's a spectrum. And this is our now acting captain.
Oh, well.
Oh, shit. I forgot you were here.
Don't worry. I forget. I'm here half the time anyway.
He got mad at me for forgetting he was there last time.
Dissociatives are a hell of a drug.
When he gets like this, he just hangs out in the back. Every now and then he says something and I jump out of my shorts.
Are you the bosun? Right. Yeah. And this is our bosun and drug dealer, foe.
That's an interesting crew you've got there.
Our mushrooms back with the boat. Not the drugs, I brought those.
Only the bare necessities.
And I am currently the acting captain. You may call me Gigil. Now that you have met all of us, may we have the pleasure of being introduced to you.
Of course, darling. I'm Hortense Pickerel. I would say at your service, that's my call line, but I am not sure about you yet. You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking that you should all come back with me and have some tea.
I could do with a spot of tea. Besides, you seem capable of anything at all, which we're not.
He gestures at the wagon full of goods and the things that we desperately need.
It seems a bit more than a perimeter check, but I am due for relaxation.
It wouldn't be poaching if we had your permission to pick up supplies here.
We can talk about that over tea.
A trade.
They don't do anything unless it's over tea.
Sounds fancy.
You should see an orgy. There's teapots everywhere.
That makes me very nervous.
Can you imagine the size of the tea bag?
Thing is, my camp is about a day and a half away on foot, so maybe a short journey.
Well, Gijo, as acting captain, what do you say?
How far away are we from the ship?
Not far, maybe like an hour or two.
Okay. Then perhaps we rendezvous with our vessel. Let our mushroom know that we will be gone for more than a few hours.
Nah, he'll be fine. I'm sure he's just passed out in the call room. I want some tea.
A day and a half from now?
He'll be fine.
So you don't think it's advisable that we walk 1 hour backwards to let our crew member know that we will be gone for what should be 3 days? Should we simply walk to their camp, have tea, and walk all the way back?
As you're speaking, Foe begins to smile.
That's a very good point. He should be notified.
He looks at Darlu.
Darlu is just busy looking at the big toad.
Don't mind them. They got in a fight over a hooker.
You know, there's the solution directly ahead of us. And it's Iris going back to tell Troth, you know, what's what. They've got a tight bond anyway.
Will Iris be capable of making that trip by themselves?
Oh, yeah, the trip's the easy part, but Iris can't talk, and I can't write, so one of you is going to have to write a note.
I got it.
This will be much easier. I'm going to scoop up like a plant from the ground. Scream into this. Oh, sorry, the message.
Oh, you got a plan for that?
Yes, the small sprout will relay the message to Sir Troth. I'm sure they can speak to each other.
But it can't understand us. He can talk to sprouts, but I fucking can't. Now, don't get me wrong, sometimes the sprouts talk to me, but that's another story.
So saying a mushroom would be better.
I'm just going to write a fucking note.
One time somebody wrote me a note on a piece of blotter acid, and underneath it it said, eat after reading.
Well, that's very thoughtful, actually.
It was either a tiny note or a fucking huge blotter.
Anytime you send a note with a snack...
I'm sure gone for tea will suffice.
Gone for tea.
Gone for hippo tea. So there's plenty of room in the back of this wagon being pulled by this creature that you are told is called a Landrox. And you can easily avoid having to hoof it all the way to the camp by riding in there.
Well, I'm not going to say no to a little easy journey.
So as Hortense jumps back up on its head, it obediently following her clicks and commands. With a single command, the Landrox begins to lumber forward, pulling the wagon easily behind it. It clears its own path through the jungle as it moves, and appears to be much faster in motion than it would appear based on how it is built. Massive raking claws make short work of the tall vegetation, and its broad, muscular shoulders simply push trees aside. A dangling trail of spittle splatters the side of the wagon as its great tongue wags out the side of its mouth. The goods in the wagon are sparse. These are supplies of someone surviving off the environment, not someone with stocks of supplies to see them through, other than the most basic storage implements and tools.
In the wagon, Darlu picks up the biggest, heaviest piece of fruit he can find and say, "Hey, Horty,
Are you addressing me?
Is that the wrong nickname?
Haughty.
Past tense, potence.
Hortense!
You got a shorter version of Hortense?
Hortense is the same length as haughty.
How do I eat this?
That's not meant to be eaten. It's for rubbing on injuries.
So you're telling me I can't eat it?
Oh, go ahead and just bite into it.
Happily. Oh, it's awful. Oh, why'd you tell me to eat it?
That's the tannins.
You've betrayed us already.
Don't worry. This is the natural progression. Next, they will try to smoke it.
We can't get ahead of ourselves. And by me, you mean we. Darlu's going to point at foe.
He's not wrong.
You are gorgeous.
Isn't he? He's a Landrox. One of the last of his kind.
Small green fingers reach out and caress your gun. A Landrox. Where did you get him?
Oh, no. This is Grandmother.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to explain that.
Oh,
Or is that better over tea?
It may be more appropriate over tea.
So it went from gun to something to you. That's a very quick evolution.
After several hours of progress plowing a path through the wilderness of this micro-island, you enter a clearing at the base of a small cliff where a tiny waterfall fills a deep pool of crystal clear water that seems to go down, down, down into various underwater caves. The sun is going down and the sounds of the jungle are changing around you. You haven't made it to Hortense's camp yet, but that doesn't mean it's not time to rest. And you imagine that when it gets dark here, it gets very dark. And this is definitely a picture-perfect place to set up a camp.
What a luxury. A bath.
What if this is edible? I'm famished.
Yes, let me actually just set up tea for us. And, Bug, if you were worried, we also have Yorkshire, a nice working man's tea. It does not have to be a fancy tea.
Oh, I usually just take Tinker's tea.
Oh, darling, what's that?
Well, you drop your old rusty nuts and bolts in some,
nope,
some
nope,
water.
No, 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 no.
You just let it steep. It's good for the digestive tract.
You can't teabag without nuts.
And if you find the right kettle, eventually it'll season into it.
Goblins all have anemia, so they need as much iron as they can get.
It's like this every day.
Oh, you poor dears.
I'll drink whatever you're making. I could get a little bougie today.
As camp is being set up, Darlu, who is not acting captain right now, is going to strip off his armor and clothing, neatly fold them, and sink himself into the water.
Nice. Why don't you roll me an athletics check to see how well you can swim down?
Ooh.
Or acrobatics.
I'm going to go with acrobatics. That is a 20 total.
Ooh, that's very good. As you swim down, just to kind of feel the rush of the cold water and get a peer at some of these strange underwater caves, you find inside of one, it kind of tilts up after the water makes its way into the entrance. So there's kind of a dry pocket beyond it. And in exploring that, you find what looks like a very old, dead skeletal body of a humanoid. At glance, maybe a human, but then you realize there's a very large lower jaw and curved tusks capped in tarnished bronze. It's wearing a chain shirt that is in solid shape, and the only thing on it that doesn't seem very decayed with time is a dagger on its belt.
Darlu, looking down at the chap, says, "You picked a hell of a place to die. Echoey, already buried. I hope I don't find what killed you. You mind if I take these?"
No response, believe it or not.
When it doesn't respond, Darlu will visibly relax and say, "Stonefather be praised," and slowly take off the chain shirt, take the dagger, and also take the little caps off of the tusks and fit them onto the end of his horns.
It'd take a little warping, but you think you could probably do that. So yeah, you walk away with a fairly intact chain shirt and this strange dagger. The blade of it looks like a kind of milky crystal.
Ooh.
And it's curved. You also find two ardor tucked in its boot.
Ooh.
As your group settles down to rest for the night, a large bonfire casts waves of light across the surrounding ferns that seem to dance in the gentle night breeze as the constant splashing of the waterfall washes over the clearing. The five of you sit around the fire, staring into the flames, lost in thought, as fires tend to manifest. When suddenly, the realization that there is a sixth individual standing near you and watching the fire causes you to jump.
Ah! Oh, fuck. You want some tea?
There is a man. To say he is a young man would not be a lie, but any degree of insight screams that this man is very old. His clothes hang loose on a near skeletal frame, worn thin and nearly in ribbons. His dark orange eyes sunken deep into sockets heavy with bags. His milk-pale skin is tight and dry, nearly transparent. A simple wooden circlet rests around his head as his hands shake, nails long and jagged, matching the toes on his bare feet. It's not the fire that holds his gaze, but the stars above.
Hey, old chap. You doing okay?
I beg you 1,000 pardons. I do not know how it is I found my way to this place. For you see, I tend to wander great distances when the night comes, and rarely take note of the feet that carry me. I did not intend to cause you alarm. Might I join you for a moment of rest? Just for a spell?
I stand and take his hand and lead him over to a nearby log or rock.
Roll me a sin craft check.
That was a 9 plus 5 for a 14.
Your fingers go numb.
Ooh.
Carrying some weight, are you?
Aren't we all? He says, looking you up and down.
Some more than most.
He graciously takes a seat that you escort him to. There is very little weight to his body.
I point my fingers at my eyes and Darlu, and then to him, surreptitiously, so as he doesn't see.
He does not notice. Every time he stops looking at one of you to speak, his eyes drift back up to the sky.
Darlu is definitely going to keep a sharp eye on this strange visitor, though he hasn't put back on all of his equipment from his little dip. Wearing just his casual clothing, he does try to snake his tail toward where he keeps his own personal dagger, not the new crystal one he got, and see if he can keep it behind his back in case things get weird.
Cool.
Find the oars?
I was going to ask you, do you know anything about his condition?
He looks like something in your wheelhouse.
Well, let's not talk about him like he's not here.
You look like something in Foe's wheelhouse.
What ails you, friend?
You are most kind strangers, and I am grateful. I don't suppose I could ask you a favor. To hear a tale, I carry it with me, and to share it with others lightens my load, if only for a short time.
Fo's mouth cracks into a crooked smile. I'd be happy to hear a tale like that.
Do you think that decision should come down to our acting captain?
You all can do what you like. This is my job.
Fair. Darlu will not scoot any closer, but continue to watch the man. And if he had ink, quill, and paper readily available, he would write down what the man was saying. But he doesn't, so he's just going to pay attention.
What do you say, Captain? Crew's yours to command, but for me, this is why I was put on this shadow world.
I don't think it's up to me to make every decision, including that during your downtime. As long as we have deemed this visitor as friendly.
I cannot confirm that.
And friendly or not, words can be dangerous, especially in a place like this.
Then if it is your task to do such things, foe, perhaps you should be the one to listen and you alone.
Something tells me that's not going to be a choice. Is it?
Look to the old man.
He's just staring up at the stars, letting you speak amongst yourselves.
I don't understand, How could words be harmful here? It sounds like it's some poor creature just needs an ear.
You're a sweet one, aren't you? Sorry. Words can do more harm than you can imagine.
As he smiles, you see his teeth are broken. One eye is that of a bovine. He holds out a hand that is covered in fireflies, literally.
But if you'd hear them, they can be some of the most beautiful words you've ever heard. Why'd you get into the League if not for adventure?
He says to the rest of the crew.
Oh, we did go for adventure and exploration, and yes, I would like to learn more, but you have cautioned over and over again that these curses find you, that these curses are a burden to bear, that you are the one to do so. Then yes, why not have the one whose job it is carry that burden, and then perhaps translate it to us?
As long as I'm here, you'll all be free from the final price. That I can promise you.
I never turn down free entertainment. I can listen while I paint my nails. She starts emptying her nail gun.
Oh, I see. If we all get cursed, that's just more for you to take.
No. I'll draw it like a magnet.
Then, if we are safe, as I had initially asked...
You are not safe.
Hmm.
But you will not bear whatever curse this man has.
Danger faced is the first step to danger understood.
This is all sounding outside of my understanding. I think I'll just do the dishes.
Let's all hear this tale, then.
You are too kind. Far too kind. As they speak, their soft, whispered words seem to fill the entire clearing. Noble king of grayest cloak, heavy was the crown of oak. Domain he held of kingdom light, his gifts all marked by sun and sight. But in the dark he had no right, neath blackened sky and stars of white, dominion cut by twilight's twain, to limit reign drove kings insane. He had to find a means and way to rule the nighttime as the day. But how do kingdoms join as one? A daughter married to a son. A son he had the night he vowed could have his heart and life allowed. A ring of silver, stone of teal, was forged at dusk to bind the deal. A prince was cursed to never die, and wedded to the evening sky. The stars his bride, the night his home, to sleep by day and walk alone. The heavy ring his father's curse, his memory reduced to verse. He longed to shed the ring and rest, trapped by vows marked on his breast. He loved the night. It was his own. He could not leave his bride alone. And the creature looks as though a great weight has been lifted as he begins to gently weep into his hand, one of which bears a thick silver ring with a teal gem.
Fo takes him into his arms and rubs his back gently.
Will I ever be free of it? Do I care? Is there anything left of me?
That's a question we all ask. Well, you don't need to be cursed to be afraid of it.
I know she would want me to rest, but I can't leave her alone. Who will care for her when I am gone?
I can take this from you, if you'd let me bear the burden.
How well do you know the stars in the sky?
Poorly, but with love.
That shall change.
Like the grinding of stone, an old, withered finger pulls the ring off of his hand, and with an immense weight places it into your palm.
Tell me, is it worth the loss of love? Even a love undesired, to know the freedom of uncertainty.
The pale figure rises, moving as though a weight has been lifted from his heart. He moves uncertainly, like learning to walk for the first time all over again. And without a word, one foot in front of the other, he wanders into the jungle, leaning on trees for balance, and weaving between them until he is out of sight.
Hell of a place you've got here, he says to Hortense. Let's see what you can show me.
And he slides the ring on.
All right. You are now the owner of a new curse. The curse of the night-wed prince. You gain a dark sight of 120 feet, and once a day you can cast the spell Moonbeam.
Ooh, shit. Okay.
Sleeping during the night in places with night and day cycles does not restore any kind of rest. Only sleeping during the day.
Shit.
And as the ring is placed on your finger, tints of white spread through parts of your hair, and your eyes have a more distinct orange color to them.
It looks like someone's just made you the happiest curse bearer in the land.
I'm as giddy as a schoolgirl.
You look it.
Well, I suppose I'll take night watch.
I cannot explain this weakness. When once I called for power, it was mine to summon. Arms for climbing the tallest tree. Legs for leaping riverbeds. Keen eyes to strike down my foes. But I feel empty. Corrupted. The bridge that I have built between myself and the heart, this core, and this ship, it has been forsaken, near burned, and in its breaking, I too have broken. I left my home to find my strength, yet here I lie, a void within me, weaker than ever. I cannot stand to hear its song of sorrow. I cannot stand to feel threadbare in its presence. How I long for the fresh air of home. To think that a mountain or tree would aid me so. And yet, it is all I can think of. Hard to imagine. I was so unprepared for failure that I have yet to truly look death in the eye.
Welcome to the jungle!
God fucking damn.
Fucking Douglas. That's rad as shit. So I don't gain the moonbeam spell.
Just once a day you can cast.
Okay, once per day I can cast.
Okay. Different than gaining the spell.
Isn't it fun?
That's fucking cool.
It's better than gaining the spell because I get to cast it for free. Hey.
fun that you were talking about. Let's cut back on all these long rests. And now you can never sleep again.
I'll never sleep again. It'll be great.
The fact that our long rests involve a lot of downtime means it's not as much of a penalty to have to sleep during the day because you have narrative flexibility. But if it comes up,
it's pretty bad for me as a warlock who needs short rests. And if I can't get short rests during the night, that is bad. That's a bad one.
That's true.
So we'll see how that shakes out.
Well, sweet day boy.
As long as they have day and night cycles. Yeah. A lot of vagueness in the void.
Voidness.
I bet there's cool stuff besides just the on paper stuff too. I bet sometimes the stars will sing a little poem at you or something. Mm. They're like, "Hello, husband, I love you."
Do we have any favorite moments anybody wants to mention? Anything that really stood out?
I really really liked just the entrance of Bill the Big Beast.
That's very
that
good.
That was fun. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
Bill the Beast.
I only learned today that his name was Bill. So thank you, Sam.
Every time I hear someone talk about tree trunks, I think about tree trunks. So thank you for also making that joke.
I look like an army brat.
I have a collection of suggestions of names for this episode.
I would love to hear some.
I got some donkers too.
Hell yeah! Who wants to start?
Let's go Max first.
All right. Unless Angelo has any.
I mean, I wrote down Hooker Don Phonics.
Was that a part of the actual recording, or did that end up getting cut?
I don't know.
I think it could be.
Yeah,
it definitely
It was a between joke.
Like I don't know if Goblin Circumcision was supposed to be.
I think that one was off the main course.
All these off the main course.
That was a really good set of jokes about letters, though. I'm not sure how much of that's going to get saved into the episode, but I think any that is, people will be like, "Oh, that's fun."
And that one was in character.
Hey, good.
I also put down Goblin Circumcision and so much Goblin Foreskin. But things I think will make it into the episode. Gross Error, when you were talking about things on the map.
Mm. Gross Error is really good.
Pasta Fresco.
Pasta Fresco is tight.
Thirsty for Honkin'. Slonky trophy.
We did get honk knife in an earlier episode. It's so we true. Should probably it's avoid true. Repeating
Slonky
words.
Trophy.
Slonky trophy.
Pretty good.
Ship wrong.
Uh-huh.
And past tense, pretense, hortense.
Ooh. That is a really good one.
I've got some extra sticky. Fuzzy diction. Also got pasta fresco.
Hell yeah.
This wasn't a direct quote lift, but the words made sense based on what was said. So it was forward to boat, back to tree. I also have hookered on phonics, the hay butt. And with a large star written next to it, slonky trophies.
Yeah. Slonky trophies.
Because that's pretty I think good. That's the portense joke is great, but the only OG fan hint that like, wait a second, slonky is a Sam word.
Yeah. I think slonky trophies, and I think in parentheses, past tense, pretense, hortense is good. That is perfect for me.
And just so we do this in the outro, like we said, we're going to, you have a +1 dagger. And as a bonus sick. Action, it can shift into a +1 scimitar.
Ooh. I like that.
Swing. Is it still milky? Still milky.
Still milky.
Gotta milk it.
From tip to haft.
It goes from whole milk to skim milk because it's being spread out. Oh, but, you
man. A scimitar.
You
how dare you
fucker.
good
awesome. So is anybody have any actually let's go around the table and introduce everybody because it's the beginning of the new chapter, starting with
I'm Angelo Kaluag. I play Gigil, a jelly boy monk of the astral.
Jelly boy, it's like a weird, like derogatory term that somebody would say in a circle jerk Reddit.
It's the forgotten Little Debbie snack.
Jelly boys.
My name is Max Hobbs. I played Daralu Naranavahan, the solid boy. I am a tiefling valor bard. That's what they're fucking called.
More like beefling.
I'm a beef. And apparently I swim really good, which is not what I expected.
I'm Sam Frost, and I play Hortense Pickerel, the boomy boy.
Welcome back.
Ooh, thank you.
Sam Frost to the League of Ultimate Questing. Hopefully we'll have you more than once, but, you know.
Yeah. It's crazy being out in the world again. Wow, I've hidden away from everyone for
freshly
so long.
Freshly babied.
Freshly babied.
Dog,
she's
I feel
cute.
You.
Yeah.
I completely feel you.
I don't know. I've been meaning to ask you guys how you are also doing things in the world because
it's complicated.
Good God.
We have, we'll talk about it later. We have methods.
Absolutely.
I am Dana Ebert. I play Lita Bag, the goblin armorer. No babies.
No children.
Yeah, no children.
In the words of the Mountain Goats.
Yeah, just chill times.
My name is Law. I was the dungeon man for this one. I also play Sir Troth the Woven this season, who is a mushroom knight, a wilder knight, to be clear. As you know, me and Dana work at TPK, and we're doing Music Ale Mondays. Once a month, we have local artists come and play some tavern music on acoustic-style instruments, and it's a lot of fun. The last one was a fucking crazy madhouse of good times.
I am Zachary Golden. I am the technical director for Slapdash Studios. I am also the co-dungeon person of this particular... I don't love that you got dungeon man and I am dungeon boy. This is a raw deal for me.
Can we have dungeon man and like dungeonkle or something like that? You know?
Look, it's the bombs, baby. It's Fat Man and Little Boy, right?
You're allowed to grow up whenever you want.
I can become the dungeon man.
The proud dungeonkle we always knew you could
exactly.
be.
Exactly.
You could be Dun Jovi.
Dun Jovi.
As you may or may not know, you can book me as a dungeon master on the slapdashstudios.com. You can also book Law, though. I imagine that's going to come down real quick.
No, yeah, mine is all... I think I already took mine down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You can do that, but it has to be through TPK.
Yeah.
So visit that one for me.
And the fact that none of you, other than Law, with Music Ale Mondays, mentioned that you can book these people at TPK.
I work at TPK, too.
I was about to say, Max is also there.
Hello.
But he's on thin ice.
I'm always on thin ice everywhere I work.
So I'm going to say this again. Max, Dana, and Law all work at TPK Brewing, which is a D&D-themed bar,
yo,
tavern, where you can go and get delicious and amazing Cuban food and book these people for games. You can also join, hopefully, next season's Wayfinder campaign, which would be absolutely fantastic for
Layfarer.
Anyone.
Layfarer. Legally not me. Wayfinder.
Exactly.
We are also a tabletop role-playing game-themed brewery distinct from any particular IP.
Correct. But other than that, I want to thank Bree Golden for being a fantastic and amazing map maker and my personal wife.
And for gifting me a set of dice that always crits.
Yeah, hell yeah. Also, with the copper and green, it feels like it's well-themed for your characters. So yeah. That's delicious.
Thank you, Bree.
And for having a name that makes you think of baked Bree.
Yes, yes.
I also want to thank Sam Hediger, the editor, for editing this particular episode, because at 1 hour, 40 minutes and a lot of cut-ins, it's going to be a rough one. But that's going to happen anytime you add a new person to the dynamic where we still kind of get our feet under us. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, we wish you luck.